to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. I'm your host, Lori.
I'm Sam. This is our not first ever long distance podcast, but
second ever.
Third ever, actually.
Third?
Yeah, because we lost two episodes of the first season and redid two of them.
I thought we only lost one.
Yeah, I like to black that out of my memory. This is like the first time we have the proper technology, I feel.
Totally. I just recently bought a microphone. Stephanie Meyer announced Midnight Sun, and I immediately bought a microphone so that we could start recording and finish Twilight before Midnight Sun comes out so that we're adequately prepared to read it.
So thanks to our patrons for sponsoring this episode, because without you, we wouldn't have been able to buy Lori a microphone.
Yeah. So exciting.
I need to unpack the fact that Midnight Sun is coming into the world before we talk about anything else.
For context, it's Saturday, May 9th. Stephanie announced on Monday.
The 4th?
Yeah, May 4th. So we're 5 days into this new world.
Yeah.
And it's really something.
It really is a new world. I did not think that it was going to be Midnight Sun. When I saw that countdown, I thought it was going to be something I wouldn't care about.
I thought it was going to be something Twilight related because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think she has the clout or like the following for anything else that it would be worth doing that dramatic of a reveal.
I wouldn't have doubted her using like Midnight Sun clout to drop like a host sequel.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that would be annoying.
I know, like that's what I was expecting. And then I have waited literally half my life for this.
Yeah, it's been
literally half my life.
I remember the devastation I felt when she put it on hold indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And like, I in that moment thought maybe it would take her a few years to get over it and that she would be publishing it. And then as time went on, it was like, it's not happening. And then that really annoying thing happened where, what's the person's name? E.L. James released Grey, the Midnight Sun equivalent of the 50 Shades of Grey saga. And so that pushed it back even further because that just upset her even more. And honestly, even with her like kind of teasing it within the last year, mm-hmm. when she had that interview and she was like, yeah, I wrote another chapter.
Right. Yeah.
I thought she would do some more stuff like that to like hype us up a little bit before actually announcing that it was coming out.
Like in a world where life and death exists, and like where life and death came out in 2015, like who knows what else she could have come up with in the last 5 years.
Oh, you know? Yeah. She could have been like, I'm writing a sequel to Life and Death. It could have been anything. Oh, it could have been like, that I Jacob and Renesmee. Oh, yeah. I would read anything. That's the annoying part.
I kind of want that, actually. Absolutely batshit. I'm beside myself. Mm-hmm. I will never recover. Mm-mm. I will never be the same again. This is the best thing that's happened to me all year.
Absolutely.
Also, there's a lot of talk going around. We've been saying it online. Other people have been saying it online. This is a really great time to donate to the Quileute mm-hmm. Tribes Move to Higher Ground campaign. So Stephanie Meyer, Some Entertainment, all that whole conglomerate has never given any money to the Quileute tribe, even though they use their name and image and sort of their stories in the mm-hmm. saga. If you would like to write that, I mean, we discussed, and a lot of people are discussing, either, you know, matching donations or donating even more to the Move to Higher Ground campaign in tandem to buying Midnight Sun, if you're going to buy Midnight Sun, mm-hmm. or any other merch that goes along with it.
Yeah, personally, I'm trying to donate exactly what I spend on any Twilight related purchase. So like the book, our patrons know that I made a huge purchase at a comic book store within the last few months because they had a lot of Twilight merchandise from New Moon. And so matching the ridiculous amount of money that I spent buying merchandise from like 2012 into a donation, it also helps me keep my spending in check.
We've talked about Move to Higher Ground before on the podcast and online. There's always a link, actually, in the description of our episodes, at least for the past couple episodes. And there is also a link in our Instagram bio and on our Tumblr. We've also, for the last couple of months, we have Gender Forking stickers, and 50% of the sales to those are going to Move to Higher Ground as well. So thanks, everyone mm-hmm. who's bought one of those. That's pretty awesome.
I'm really interested. I think, like, there's a couple of things that I'm thinking about in terms of Midnight Sun. We'll probably start every podcast from now on with an update about where Midnight Sun is at. Stephanie said that she's going to be releasing news along the way, like updates, announcements, stuff like that. Some big questions for me are, and this isn't dependent on Stephanie, this is dependent on the state of COVID-19, but are we going to get a Midnight book release in August?
Yeah, I don't know how fast we'll be able to get it. I'm definitely going to pre-order it.
Amazon says that it's going to be delivered on the day that it's released, but they're also, I mean, there's like conflicting messages about what their shipping is going to be like for the next, you know, inevitable future. So because they're focusing on basic needs shipments of like toilet paper and stuff like that, which makes sense, obviously.
Midnight Sun isn't a basic need.
Right. It feels like a basic need to me.
Essentials only.
I wonder if we're going to get merch.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be something. What I've been thinking, I mean, I feel like we've been speculating randomly on the podcast for the, like, this whole season about like a Twilight Netflix series, but we also talked about a Midnight Sun like series, and like, what if this gets turned into a series?
Here's the thing, the Twilight Renaissance has been going on for quite some time now.
Yeah, it's been like at least 3 years.
Yeah, and then I think it's honestly picked up because of, like, TikTok.
True, yeah.
Like, I think that's really pulling in a lot of people that are maybe not yet, like, watching. Maybe they're, I think a lot of people are going back to the movies. I don't think as many are returning to reading the books. I, like, have friends from work that I know are not Twilight fans who get Twilight TikToks on their For You page and, like, send them to me all the time. It's having a moment. I feel like we might get something bigger out of this than just Midnight Sun. What I'm curious about is if we get merch, if we get merchandise. We all know what Twilight merchandise looks like. It looks like it was born in the time it was born. It looks like early 2010s, like, horrible, like, the design, it's bad.
Like Hot Topic stuff.
It's Hot Topic t-shirts, like, before they were at all cute.
Yeah.
Like, they're not good. I'm wondering if there's the possibility that we could get actually good merchandise out of this.
I can't fathom what it would be.
And it's almost like I don't want to put hope into the fact that it might look good because the book cover is not great.
Go off.
Like, let's talk about the cover.
Okay.
I like the pomegranate. I don't need hands to be there. I also think there could have been a better picture of a pomegranate. I think I personally, with my iPhone 6S, could take a better picture of a pomegranate than the picture that they included. I feel like there's a lot of, like, the pith showing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you didn't move that out of the way. It's like, maybe they just couldn't get their hands on a pomegranate.
Someone...
And they just took, like, a stock photo and paid for it.
Someone in the Discord recently posted, like, two alternative pomegranate covers that were really nice. Like, one of them was quite bloody, and I liked that.
Yeah, it was Veronica, I think. Do I want really good merch? Yes. Do I think we're going to get it? We'll probably get something. I just don't think it'll be.
If there's a series eventually, then there'll probably be more merch. Because then there will be, like, special editions of the book, et cetera, et cetera.
Should we give a little update about what's up with us?
Yeah, sure.
You go ahead.
Okay. We talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, and we talked about it more, like, on our Patreon, I think, and, like, on our Instagram, that right before the pandemic hit, we were supposed to go on a Twilight road trip of the Pacific Northwest. We had everything booked, like, the first week of March, and then everything happened, like, a week after that. Obviously devastated beyond belief that it's not happening. Honestly, Midnight Sun coming out has, like, eased a lot of that pain for me.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I definitely had to grieve for a bit and, like, couldn't engage with Twilight for a second.
Yeah, I couldn't watch it.
Yeah. Too sad.
Yeah, I was literally like, too sad. So sad. We didn't talk about it very much.
We can't talk about it. Like, I mean, it's gonna happen eventually, but, like, maybe not for a while, but... Yeah, I mean, we had everything booked, not to, like, focus too heavily on our strife, because obviously everyone's lost something during this time. But, like, that was definitely our thing that we lost. That was, like, the most painful.
We were going to be staying in the Twilight Swan house, like, Bella's house in St. Helens, Oregon.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to, like, creating some content for the podcast and for the Patreon out there. It'll just happen at a later date now, but... Yeah, I had, like, a tour lined up with the Forever Twilight and Forks exhibit. So yeah, all of that's been pushed off, but we'll definitely go another time. But yeah, we were supposed to go early April, a month ago, actually, which is wild.
Yeah, yeah, time flies.
Yeah. Other than that, though, I mean, both of us have been pretty fortunate because we both still have our jobs.
Yeah.
We've been working this entire time. Actually, like, right before everything happened, we kind of, like, around the same time, we, like, both got promoted at our respective places at work, which was wild.
Yeah, it was really weird that it lined up like that. Yeah. Honestly, like, really great timing because it's provided a lot of security for me during this time. So, been really lucky. Been working from home, sheltering in place. Still in Southern California, so we've been under a stay-at-home order, mandatory masks outside, stuff like that. Governor Newsom has been pretty good about managing the crisis here, so
that's great.
Doing well, getting a little restless about being at home, but that's that it is what it is. It's very, like, Cullen-like, you know?
Honestly, the last two playlists that I made for the Patreon were, like, all, like, quarantine-themed. The first one was about Edward Cullen being pro-vaccination, and then the second one was about being quarantined at the Cullens, because that's basically how they live all the time, and I just, like, couldn't stop imagining what Bella's life would be like if she was a human during this pandemic.
I think Edward would have, like, kidnapped her and forced her to live at the Cullens' house.
Oh, yeah.
And she would have been really resistant because I'm sure Charlie would have had to be going to work and blah, blah, blah. Like, true. I don't know. And then with, like, Renee and Phil being other places and, like, all the humans.
And, yeah, what an interesting Florida, everywhere. Yeah.
Is someone writing this fan fiction? Because I feel like they should be.
We have had stay at home in Maine, but I've been working from work the entire time because I work at a place that manufactures food. So my job has been in person. But other than that, staying home a lot. We actually, our stay at home order is, like, kind of being lifted. Maine is, like, pretty sparse in terms of population. And they just announced that they're ramping up on testing here, which is awesome. So hopefully that all works out, because you never know. But hopefully everyone can get tested who needs to get tested, and then things will start being all right. I mean, it's killing tourism here, but
I'll come back.
Yeah, Lori will single-handedly patronize every single business.
Catch me at every lighthouse. No, those are free.
That's not helpful.
Lined up really well that we're starting to record again because I'm graduating next weekend.
Yeah.
From home.
Think about all the times that we have talked about being in grad school on this podcast.
It's about to end.
Yeah. It's been over for me for a while now. I'm just like an adult who is not in school, which is really weird.
Yeah, I can't wait for that to be me. I have literally like one more thing to do, and it's make some edits to my thesis and then submit it to our publishing company at school. So that's really exciting. My cap and gown is here with my
hood. What's your thesis about?
Oh, my thesis is called Queer and Trans Inclusivity in California State University System Women Centers. It's about queer and trans inclusivity in California State University Women Centers.
Juicy.
Juicy. It's pretty exciting. I defended it already and it went really well. Uh-huh. And that means I passed. So almost done. Which means I get to devote all my free time to this now instead of homework.
Another thing that I wanted to tell you, completely unrelated to everything we've been talking about, is that last night I had a dream that we were watching Breaking Dawn, but it wasn't, like, the Breaking Dawn that we know. It was, like, some weird kind of fucked up, like, version of Breaking Dawn that was probably influenced by... It had a lot of, like, Game of Thrones plot twists. Like, a lot of violence, basically, is what I'm saying. And I was
honestly, Breaking Dawn.
Yeah, it's true. I was loving it, but all I can remember now, like, the only clear thing that I can remember now is that Renesmee was beheaded. And, like, in the dream, I have, like, this clear image in my head of the Chuckez, my doll's head, like, wrapped in a blanket, like, in someone's arms.
Oh, my God.
Which, honestly, I would love it if that happened in the movie. And I think I'm gonna make a meme of, like, Arrow holding up Carlyle's head, but just superimpose Chakesme's head under
his
hand.
Oh my God.
Hand.
I watched a TikTok, I think it was a TikTok a few weeks ago, of someone who was talking about Chakesme and, like, I don't know if I sent it to you, but I should have. And how the docent at Forever Twilight and Forks that gave her a tour told her that the Chakesme doll was haunted and that her socks used to be white, but that she breaks out of her little display case at night and walks around and the bottoms of her socks get dirty.
Stop. No.
And that, like, things are moved overnight and stuff. And I was like, I'm so scared.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard. Not
at all. But it was, I was just shook to my core. Absolutely wild.
Let's do the forks cast.
Today, the forks cast. It is 81 degrees and partly cloudy in Forks. It's going to rain coming up next week, Monday through the following Monday. But this weekend looks like partly cloudy, pretty good weather, into the upper 70s and 80s during the day and into the 50s at night, which is actually really similar to how it is in San Diego right now. Pretty nice. Wow. And by nice, I mean I hate it. But yeah, it's fine for everyone else.
For today's episode, we read chapters 12 and 13 of Twilight. That's Balancing and Confessions.
I want to say chapter 12 is the cutoff point of where Midnight Sun ends.
Yes, I think it is.
The part that we've been exposed to already. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to say about Midnight Sun. Do you think she's going to go back and edit?
Like, probably.
Heavily? Or do you think she's just going to, like, tweak it?
I mean, I'm sure the bare bones are the same.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about that. I've been wondering, like, I kind of want to, like, I don't know if she's going to take down that PDF or not ever, but I want to, like, at some point, I don't, maybe not in the podcast, but, like, kind of cross-reference a little bit. I haven't read that in a while. Another thing, actually, remember, like, months and months ago on Tumblr, someone was like, hey, I think I found this full leaked version of Midnight Sun, and we were like, it can't be.
I don't know if we ever talked about that on the podcast.
I don't think we did, because, like, yeah. I think I just was like, it can't be Midnight Sun.
So someone, yeah, sent us a PDF. No, it wasn't. It was like a link to a really sketchy website. It wasn't downloadable because I remember I wanted to download it to be able to, like, manipulate it a little bit better. It was kind of hard to click through. But it had the definitely, like, it was the first 12 chapters of Midnight Sun from Stephanie's perspective. And then this person was like, this is the whole thing. Like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
This was before Stephanie came out and said that she was writing it again.
Right. This was probably like up to 2 years ago that this happened.
Yeah. We were like kind of looking into it a little bit, but I don't think I really put too much effort into it because it seemed so far out of the realm of possibility that Midnight Sun would ever be a thing. So it'll be really, I did read
that draft. Yeah. We could go back into our Tumblr and see if that link is still available. I would love to hang on to it because I remember reading it and being like, if this isn't real, it's really good and I'm enjoying it.
I don't remember if the person that sent it to us ever told us where they got it from, or like
they didn't want to, like, make a Tumblr post about it and circulate it that way. They were just like trying to quietly be like, hey, have you heard about this?
Yeah, which was really cool. I appreciated them sending it to us. I also appreciate that it wasn't a huge thing, because if it was actually Midnight Sun,
if it had actually gotten
leaked, probably
would
have lost her mind.
Yeah, I don't know. We should check that out, actually.
So 12 and 13, basically where we left off is that Edward, I guess, drove Bella home from school. Billy, Jacob, and Charlie are all getting there around the same time. Basically where we left off is they're about to come into the house, all of them. And Bella is like, oh shit. From the look in Billy's eyes, she knows that Billy truly believes that, or like knows and believes that Edward is a vampire. So she's like, oh shit.
And she basically spends the entire time that they're there not letting them out of her sight so that she can intercept in case Billy tries to tell something to Charlie.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't.
Right. And it's also really interesting. So Billy and Jacob saw Edward kind of leaving quickly, but Jacob didn't know who it was because he didn't recognize his car. Mm-hmm. And so he's like trying to find out
car.
Yeah, he's like, I don't recognize.
I know every single car in this town.
Yeah. And he was like, that's a pretty nice ride he's got. You know, Bella's trying to avoid telling Jacob that it's Edward. And
he's
then
nosy.
He's nosy. He's flat out like, I didn't recognize the driver. I thought I knew most of the kids around here. And she just like nods.
I hope you can take this as a compliment, but it made me think of you.
Thank you. I can take that as a compliment. And then he like presses it. He's like, my dad seemed to know him from somewhere. And then he's like, so who was it? And then he laughs at her when she tells him, which is so funny.
Jacob obviously doesn't buy into the same stuff as Billy. He's a little bit, like, sort of chagrined at his dad's antics that he doesn't believe in. There's some interesting dynamics in this household right now because there's like a couple reasons why they came over. One mm-hmm. is their TV broke and they want to watch the game, but they're kind mm-hmm. of being like, oh, we just wanted to see you. And then
yeah.
when Jacob lets that slip, Billy's like, oh, well, Jacob wanted to see Bella again.
Yeah, it's funny. They're like throwing each other under the bus.
Yeah. But then there's this other kind of reason that Jacob reveals is that it seems like Billy and Charlie haven't seen each other in a while and they had a little bit of a fight or a falling out, presumably over Carlisle or the Cullens.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. I didn't remember that conflict being recent. Like, I thought, like, I know that there was a mention of Billy and Charlie disagreeing over the Cullens, but I didn't mm-hmm. realize, like, it seems like, you know, Jacob says Charlie chewed him out pretty good last time. They haven't spoken much since. Tonight is sort of a reunion. I don't think he'd bring it up again. Yeah. They were definitely recently talking about the Cullens.
Also, it kind of, like, plays into how much Charlie loves Carlisle.
Yeah, I love that.
I don't think we ever get an explanation as to, like, why they would be talking about them, but it was presumably just Billy kind of, like,
maybe venting?
Yeah, probably venting. Or we don't know if it happened before Twilight or if it was more recent. Like, maybe it had something to do with Bella having to go to the hospital.
Well, I think it would have to be recent because didn't, like, they
spoke. He bought the truck.
He bought the truck from Billy, so he has spoken in between the time that Bella got to Forks.
Yeah.
And this time they've had the conversation about the Cullens.
But also, I mean, not that it would have come up, but it might have happened between the beach and now because Jacob didn't say anything. Because they were just like, oh, like, let's, or I don't know.
Yeah, you think he would have mentioned.
Shit, I kind of want to check. Oh, yeah, no, it says, he says, it was nice to see you again. And she says, it really was. Next time Charlie comes down to see Billy, I'll come too. And he says, that would be cool. And they don't mention them, like, not seeing each other. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's been recent, which is, yeah. What happened in between?
Like,
I can't imagine the context. Like, maybe the police work frequently with the people, like, with doctors, but
it's not even, like, in the movie where there's, like, mysterious disappearances.
Yeah.
Like, none of that is happening.
Maybe Billy brought it up. Like, at this point, there should be, like, there's no conflict between the Cullens and the Wolves. Weird.
It's weird. Yeah, then they leave. And then Charlie's, like, weirdly inquisitive. He never asks questions.
Yeah, like, that's what Bella likes about him. He doesn't really ask questions. He doesn't hover. I think he's concerned about leaving over the weekend and Bella not going to the dance. I think he's worried that his daughter's, like, antisocial or something. That must be, like, a weird stress to have as a parent. I think he's appropriately wary of their relationship when it does happen because, like, of just, like, the way that most parents are when their children start dating. And I don't think he really takes it, like, very over the top. But it is interesting that she's dating the child of someone that he deeply, deeply respects and, like, admires, it seems. And he doesn't seem to be excited about that. Mm. I wish that there was more Charlie Carlisle bonding because I feel like they could have conversations.
That is, you're right. It is kind of weird that he wouldn't, like, automatically sign off on that relationship. I mean, it's good to be skeptical, I guess, but
yeah.
I mean, and then he immediately does have reason to be skeptical, but
yeah, I mean, like, through the events of Twilight, it's definitely, like, clear that he can no longer, like, trust Edward.
He has, like, two extremely differing, like, sources for who Edward might be, which would be Carlisle and Billy. So
which makes sense.
Just depending on who he's closer with on that day.
Charlie, like, is like, are you gonna, you should maybe go to the dance this weekend with Mike Newton. And Bella's like,
is Charlie team Mike?
I wrote that. I was like, Charlie's team Mike. That's so weird. Like, I guess, like, I
he's
guess
team when, Mike and Charlie's team Jacob, you know?
Yeah. I guess when you think about, like, it makes sense for parents to want their children to date, like, the normie. Like, mm-hmm. Most parents, I feel like, don't have the hope that their child will date someone that's not completely normal in every way.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, that's probably what people dream of.
On page 241, Bella continues with her very extraneous, almost flamboyant descriptions of Edward that we are getting more and more of in this section.
Yeah.
She sees him and she says, I couldn't imagine how an angel could be any more glorious. There was nothing about him that could be improved upon.
It's like me when I look at my cat.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's perfection.
Yeah.
It was cute. She's, like, so excited. She's, like, running to his car, like, jumping in the front seat really quickly.
Yeah.
And then she asks him how his night was, and he says, pleasant. His smile was amused. I felt like I was missing an inside joke. I was like, you watched her sleep, you dirty fuck.
You motherfucker. Like, honestly, that kind of made my skin crawl a little bit. I was like, that's gross.
I wish Twilight had leaned into the creepy.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit more, like, and not tried to make it so, like, okay later.
Romantic.
And, like leaned into the fact that that's like a really creepy thing, and maybe like if the story was written a little bit differently, and maybe it'll come across in Midnight Sun, honestly.
Yeah.
But if it was written a little bit differently, and like the audience knew in this moment that he had been watching her sleep, which is something we don't find out until later, that's a creepy moment, and that could have been like a fun little like.
That'd be such like a speed bump in like a real relationship, I feel.
Yeah.
I'd be like, excuse me?
If they had had a conversation where they had to talk about appropriate boundaries, especially like with his superhuman ability to like eavesdrop and just like be there all the time, like that would have been fun. But no, that is not what we have.
Nope, that's not what we have. They continue their conversation that they were having yesterday. He's just like asking her a bunch of get to know you questions.
I wanted to talk about something.
Okay.
So she says, you know, he asks about the boys that she's dated, and she says, I was relieved that I'd never really dated anyone, which is not clear enough for me. I have a lot of questions about that, because I feel like if I were in that circumstance and I had truly never dated anyone, I would be like, which is great, because I didn't never dated anyone.
I'd
and
never
I know that
anyone.
She's like mentioned kind of going on like group dates to like the movies or something like that.
That
am
was,
I imagining
that was
that?
Bo.
Oh, that was Bo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which like maybe Bella did too, and she's just like, that wasn't really anything, which like it isn't, so.
It's not, but it also kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's different that to go on like one group date, because like going on a date is not the same as dating someone, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like a common thing in like teen books, which this is, a common thing in teen books, and this is relevant later, is like this whole like, I've never been kissed thing.
Right.
And Bella doesn't elaborate on whether that's her like the case or not.
Yeah.
Even when she has her first kiss with Edward later, it's like, we don't know Bella's like dating history. Like, we don't know if she's ever held hands with someone. Like, teenagers, you know, are teenagers. Like, she might have like had a like her first kiss or something with someone after like a stupid slimy little movie date, you know.
Yeah.
But she never talks about it, and Edward doesn't ask.
It's they're not explicit about it,
and they're not really explicit about like Edward either.
Yeah, in, we don't, we definitely past. Don't know about Edward.
Like,
yeah.
We don't know, like, he, you know, people got married really young in the olden times. Like, he could have like been courting someone, kissed someone, like he probably definitely didn't have sex, like we know that, but we don't get a lot of details into like what this dating history is, which I think is really, I just feel like Edward would want to know super specifically at some point.
I mean, maybe it's not common or normal, or I'm not gonna say normal, maybe it's not common for people in relationships to communicate like their history explicitly, because maybe they're not comfortable, they don't want to like make the other person feel jealous, but I hate that, and I feel like, why not share exactly where you're at?
Maybe not on your first maybe not on your second date, not before you've kissed or something like that, but you'd think eventually they would address that, and it's really every time like kind of just like swept under the rug from what I can remember. It's just like like, I didn't really have that much experience, and it's like, but what experience did you
I refuse to believe that it didn't happen at some point. It just must have happened off page, you know, like,
yeah,
how would they have not had that conversation? But the way that he asks is so serious and dramatic. Like, he says, so you never met anyone you wanted.
I was like the way you phrased
do they want
that. Like, yeah, he didn't say like, so you never met anyone you were interested in, or like, you never met anyone
you,
that like,
like, you liked,
was cute to you, you know, like, whatever. Like, I'm like, man, dramatic.
I felt in this whole section, there's like this bit where they're at lunch and Edward, or they're going to go to lunch, I don't know, and Edward reveals that he and Alice are leaving after lunch, and that they're going to go get her truck for her so that she doesn't have to walk home. And she's like, I don't know how you're going to, like, get my truck because the keys are in my pocket in the laundry or whatever. But imagine if in this universe, vampires needed permission to enter places. Like, he would never be able to go. Like, this is the opposite, because he would never be able to go into her room and watch her sleep. He wouldn't be able to break into her house all the time. This boy is always constantly in her house.
Constantly.
Like, he's constantly in her house.
I feel like if he couldn't enter the house, he would be sitting in the woods right outside her house, just like listening for like any sounds of hers.
He would like just be hanging onto her windowsill, like,
yeah, but like nose pressed against. People drove by.
True. But like at night.
Yeah, I know, but like, ah, god, I kind of wish that was the case, because everything, but also just like, yeah, it's not. So
there's a lot of lines in the rest of this chapter and the next chapter that are kind of like this, so I probably won't even like pick apart every single one, but there's a lot of like hot and cold here. They're talking about going to the meadow, or to, I don't know if they're still going to Seattle at this point, I don't remember, but he's like, you could always cancel, you know, like he's like kind of pleading with her to like cancel, and it's like, you could also cancel, you dumbass, like if you really don't think you can handle it, just cancel it. Mm-hmm. And so much use of the word like fear and afraid, and it's used in so many different contexts. I don't know if that's just like a writing thing that's bothering me or what, but there's a lot of discussion of fear, and Bella keeps saying that she's not afraid of him, but then sometimes she is afraid of him, and then sometimes she's just afraid of losing him, and then she's afraid of like what he will think of her, and like all these different uses of fear that are really hard to keep track of, honestly.
Yeah.
Also, most of the time, she's just trying not to be, like, persuaded by his beautiful eyes.
Oh, my God. Maybe just, like, Bella doesn't have the, like... No, because she is so reflective and she's so good at, like, naming her emotions and stuff like that. That, yeah, like, she needs to find a way to distinguish between, like, not just what she's afraid of. Like, I think that, like, she's clear that she's not afraid of Edward as, like, a concept. Mm-hmm. She's afraid of losing him. She's afraid of all this other stuff, like her perception and like being awkward and like all that stuff. But I think that's not necessarily like fear. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is something my therapist always says to me, is like, is that something that normal people would feel? Like, do you think that's a normal amount of fear that you're feeling? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that's like something that's actually something, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, do you think that's anything? Or is it like, is that just how people feel before they go on a date with someone that they like? Mm-hmm. In Bella's case. Mm-hmm.
I find I'm constantly asking myself that question of her.
Yeah, you know, right. Like, this is normal. I think it's normal.
Yeah, I think that kind of the up and down is probably to be expected. But it is, like, very interesting to read the ebb and flow of that emotion, mm-hmm, coming out, like, so transparently, honestly. Throughout this section and probably the next chapter too, there is a bit with Alice.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
We stand. You know, when they start talking about the Cullens, something that I think is like so interesting is that like she's like, they don't like me.
Yeah.
And they can hear her.
Yeah, they can hear her. Also, like, Rosalie glares at her in this section.
And Edward hisses at her to make her stop.
Animals.
I hate it here.
Hey, high school. I'm going to graduate.
When your boyfriend hisses at his sister so that she stops glaring at you in the lunchroom, just relatable content from a high schooler.
He says, they don't understand why I can't leave you alone. And she says, neither do I. Sounds like Bella would actually really get along with his siblings.
Yeah, the little Alice part is so fun.
Yeah, I've been trying to track Edward's experience, because we really don't start getting his perspective until now, and then more so in the next chapter when he kind of, like, opens up about everything that's happened. But he started being a little bit more expressive about, like, you fascinate me, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I've been trying to track, like, what is this for him? Like, what is it about? Not that I think that Bella is, you know, boring or unlikable or anything, mm-hmm, like that. I'm just trying to, like, understand, like, why her and why now? I don't think it's, like, a reach at all. I want Midnight Sun to get more perspective. But I think Bella is also asking that question. Bella, like, does not understand. But he does say something when she asks him about it in this section on 245. She's like, why is this happening? And he's like, people are predictable, but you never do what I expect. You always take me by surprise. And she narrates that she's embarrassed and dissatisfied. His words made me feel like a science experiment. That's so sad.
It is really sad. It's also kind of like, I feel like that was maybe not the best answer from him.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's really out of her control and not tied to her personality at all.
Right, right.
Like, she's not unpredictable to him because of who she is as a person. She's unpredictable to him because
he can't read her mind.
Like, his inability to read her mind. Yeah, like, it's not anything about her. And I feel like if I were in that situation, I would be like, oh, so it's not me. It's just that I'm not predictable.
Yeah.
And that I'm, like, different from everyone else that you've ever met, which is, like, not fun. But I don't think that's actually why he likes her.
No.
I think it helps him, like, be, like, less on guard around her and, like, he gets to, like, have a normal relationship for once.
Yeah, I mean, but, weirdly, like, the circumstances of, like, her blood being especially potent to him and also him not being able to read her mind and, like, all these weird things that have, like, brought them together, like, weirdly, that has given him the opportunity to connect with a new person for the first time in, like, decades.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's, like, an interesting coincidence. So maybe it's more, like, not to say that they're not compatible, but it's, like, that circumstance definitely, like, weirdly helps the fact that they're able to, like, bond.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like the only other person it seems like he feels at all affectionate towards outside of his immediate family is Angela.
Right.
Because he, like, can read her mind and finds her, like, really, really,
really nice.
Nice. But it's, like, I don't think that's authentic to, like, most people's experience. I feel like if someone could read my mind, they would think I was a complete total bitch just because, like, your mind has your unfiltered thoughts in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Like,
there's a part in the next chapter where he's, like, I had to stoop to reading Jessica's mind, which is annoying because her mind isn't very original, which is so mean.
It's super mean, and it's, like, of course he doesn't like Jessica. Like, all of the meanest parts of her are inside her head.
Right, yeah.
But, like, so is everyone else's.
Right.
Like, he's mean, too.
Right, very mean. Like,
if, like, mind reading was real, I don't think that person would be able to, like, have a relationship with someone that was... I don't think that relationship would be possible. I just feel
right.
Like,
there's,
like,
just no boundaries. There's some really lovely descriptions of Rosalie and Alice back to back here.
Yeah.
She describes Rosalie as his blonde and breathtaking sister with her dark, cold eyes. All right. And then Alice, her short, inky hair in a halo of spiky disarray around her exquisite elfin face. And her slight frame was willowy, graceful, even in absolute stillness. And she has a high soprano voice, almost as attractive as his.
We love.
And she left without another word. Her walk was so fluid, so sinuous, that I felt a sharp pang of jealousy.
It was amazing.
She's starting to lie for Edward and the Cullens. I mean, she started before, but, like, now it's, like, actively on her mind.
She's, like, lying to Jessica, to Mike.
Very easily, too. And I was like, wow, Spotlight by Mute Math is the perfect song for this situation.
Yeah, it is. This whole thing about the Cullens don't do a very good job fitting into high school. He, like, reaches across the lunchroom table and touches her face, brushing his hand along her cheekbone.
Again.
If I saw someone do that in my high school cafeteria that I ate in a total of one time in my 4 years in high school, I would have dropped out.
Yeah.
That is so annoying.
He did this a lot in the last chapter, too. I'm like, why is this their thing? Like, it's, like, far more obnoxious than, like, a kiss, in my opinion.
It's also, like, they are supposedly not supposed to be touching as much as other couples would be, and it's, like, then don't act like that.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me be, like, Jeremy from Life and Death, like, had every right to ask what base they got to.
Jeremy writes.
Hot take. Oh my god.
So, you know, Edward goes home. She talks to Mike, who's sad that she's not going to the dance.
She can instinctively tell on page 248 that tomorrow, Saturday, their time together is, like, really pivotal. Like, something, it's gonna, like, change something. On page 251, she's also kind of, like, reeling about that she's, like, nervous for tomorrow and oh yeah, this is where she takes the cold medicine to knock her out. Drug
That's
use.
Such a mean move.
Remember when you taught me that Mormons don't drink caffeine? She doesn't even drink caffeine, but here she is abusing cough medicine.
Yeah, which is really interesting because it's like melatonin exists and I take it.
It's true.
You know? Yeah. Like, I definitely used to do this, though, because I didn't know about melatonin.
Okay. You can get addicted to it.
You can, yeah, absolutely.
She says something interesting, which is that she can't cut him out of her life. And she says that, besides, since I'd come to Forks, it really seemed like my life was about him, in italics.
I don't
That's not untrue.
Yeah, it's not, but it's also like, whoa.
Like, read your Pride and Prejudice collection on the lawn more often and hang out with Jessica.
Yeah. yeah. She needs to get a life and she needs to get friends, and I think it gets a little bit better when she starts to have relationships with the Cullen siblings, because it's like, okay, it's not just Edward, and that's healthier than, like, or, like, that's more sustainable than just having Edward.
Right.
But we see how that turns out in New Moon when Alice isn't loses there, all of and them. She's... like, oh shit, they're all gone.
Right. Well, that's what she says. The very next line is, but the tiny voice in the back of my head worried, wondering if it would hurt very much if it ended badly, which she doesn't really talk about what she means by that. But, like, there's multiple lines in this that kind of reference, like, oh, like, I would leave if I have to keep you safe, et cetera, et cetera. And then that happens and it's terrible. And then the only other friends that she makes are the werewolves. And then that's also bad. Or ends up it's being so difficult.
Shall we talk about this outfit choice?
Okay, so this
outfit. She wakes up in the morning. The morning that she has already stated is going to change their relationship forever. What does she wear? Jeans, which I can only presume for the time period, are bell bottoms. Sam is...
I think they're flare
wearing
jeans.
Wearing this outfit.
I'm wearing this outfit. I don't have flare jeans. I hid my collar from you.
But I'm wearing a sleeveless white-collared shirt. You have a sleeveless white-collared shirt?
It's not a button-down. It buttons to here. It's my Scholastic Books Are Fun shirt.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm shook to my core.
This is what she's wearing. I'm modeling it.
It's like, it's not that it's not cute. It's just that...
it's very business casual.
Yeah, it's like you're going hiking.
She doesn't know they're going hiking.
That's true.
I have a lot to say about this, but what a dick move that he forced her to hike 5 miles and did not tell her.
I literally wrote that I would have broken up with him if he did that to me.
That's such a bad date idea. Like, that's like almost like a trope. It's like if someone springs something like to action adventure on you and you like are so unprepared, like that's such a bad time.
Yeah. And like he's met her, right?
Right.
Like, she's a disaster.
He should have prepared her. She said, luckily, I wore my tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Which probably aren't even good enough for 5.
I wear Birkenstocks every day.
Right.
If someone was like, let's hike for 5 miles, I'd be like, all right, have fun. I'll see you at the bottom.
The outfit gets funnier in that Edward is wearing the exact same outfit.
Edward is literally wearing the same thing.
He chose to hike in that, which doesn't really impact him. Whatever.
Yeah.
The sleeveless thing on Edward really gets to me, though. Sleeveless
that
button down on
me.
And collar on men. That hurts.
Where did he buy a sleeveless button down white shirt?
I think it was like a thing back then.
It's such a bold move on your first date to be like, let me expose my chest. I'm 17 and I'm confident enough for that. Like, what?
It ends up being the perfect outfit for him to expose the sparkling planes of his chest in the sunlight in the meadow.
You're right. Of all the colors, why did Stephanie say tan?
It is like,
for the sweater.
She's a huge khaki thing.
She does.
But also,
I don't understand it.
Like, you know how you and I dress the same on accident all the time?
Yeah.
Like, they're so on the same wavelength. Like, it is like huge, honestly, just like huge lesbian energy that they've started dressing the same. It's not every day that you can cosplay Bella and Edward at the exact same time, but today is one of those days.
Today is one of those days.
This is probably like the most pronounced fashion choice of all of them.
Khaki skirt has got it for me.
But the fact that they're matching is a big one.
Yeah,
here.
That's huge, but the khaki skirt takes the cake for me. Right now, my Animal Crossing character is dressed as Bella. I have a floor-length khaki skirt and the peasant blouse in white and blue.
Oh my god.
And it's like, it looks really cute on my Animal Crossing character, but if I tried to wear that, I would never. I just, like, can't. I can't get behind the khaki skirt. Like... draw as many nice pictures of it as you want. Like, you will never win me over. I will never, ever,
especially
ever,
if it's
believe.
Literally made of khaki material.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you can draw, like, a really cute, like, camel-colored skirt that's right. like silk or whatever, but it's not. It's like
it's not a khaki
it's
skirt.
A khaki is khaki like, skirt.
We'll get there very soon. Yeah. Their dynamic here is like super weird. Edward is really punchy and like Bella is rightfully frustrated and like freaked out. They like don't talk very much, which is a little bit uncharacteristic. I mean, I think they talk a bit on their hike. I just can't believe that he didn't tell her they were gonna hike for 5 miles. Did he? I think maybe he forgot what it's like to be human.
Yeah, she gets justifiably mad about the hike.
Yeah.
Or frustrated about the hike, and then he gets upset that she hasn't told anyone that they're together because she's trying to protect him by being like, by lying and saying that they're not together and saying that he's out of town for the weekend.
He says, "Are you so depressed by Forks that it's made you suicidal?" What
That's
kind
mean.
Of, what kind of phrase is that?
That's mean.
Yeah.
Like, she's confided in him that this is not her ideal place. If someone said that to me, I would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like, excuse you. Oh my god. I, like, don't even get why they're fighting here. It's, like, just, like, it's so strange. And, I mean, like you said, like, he's met her. He knows that she's accident prone. Why would he make her hike 5 miles? 5 miles is a lot. That's yeah. hours.
So, I looked it up on Google Maps. This is a fake route.
Okay, I was wondering. So,
when you go north on the 101 from Forks, above, like, the town of Forks, you can only turn left on the 110, not right on the 110, and it takes you, the 110 takes you left west to Lepush, and there is no, like, right turn on it, and the other road that's, like, next that you could turn right on just takes you, like, up, like, and
Port Angeles?
Back to the,
oh.
back to the 101.
Hmm. Yeah, I was wondering about
there's
that.
There's probably no meadow. At that location. It is weird that she put in the effort to name the roads after roads that exist in Forks, but then just, like...
She takes, like, two turns, and he's like, okay, now we drive till the road ends. It's like, how...
Yeah, and it's like, I don't feel like Route 110 just, like, ends if it's right, important exactly. enough to be Route 110.
Yeah. Also, when they get there, they're not even on a trail. They're not hiking on a trail at all. I would be so flustered.
My, like, history hiking, there's no way.
Mm-hmm. That's true. No I tried way. To take you on a hike one time.
Never again. Had a cold. I hadn't eaten. I almost passed out before we even got to the base
true.
Of the trail.
It's true.
And I spent the time that they were hiking laying down in Sam's car trying to regain my ability to be a human being.
We get a lot of, like, I don't want to say Edward's anatomy in this, but, like, that's kind of what it is. We get a lot of descriptions of, like, his body and his skin, which I find kind of interesting thinking about just the way that vampires are here. Mm-hmm. It's most often compared to stone and marble, but I think it gives away a lot as to, like, what the vampire body is like. First of all, his white sleeveless shirt is sleeveless and unbuttoned.
I hate that.
She describes him as having contours on his chest and the perfect musculature no longer merely hinted at behind concealing clothes. So he has perfect muscles.
It's fake news. I'm excited to see what Edward's thinking about in the silent time that they're hiking.
Yeah. She does describe them having more conversation about her, like more questions about her. There's that bit mm-hmm. I love about her killing 3 fish in a row and giving up on the whole institution, which is really funny.
Yeah.
And then they kind of arrive at the meadow.
I feel like this is one of probably the first things that Stephanie wrote from Twilight because she
right.
had a dream about the meadow scene. This is what caused the whole shit. Like, this is what caused the whole saga, this one dream.
It's
I don't remember
nuts.
If it was, like, online or if I was talking to somebody and they were like, she definitely lied about having that dream, right?
I never have dreams that are like that. I mean, case in point, the dream I had last night about headless Renesmee. That's my dream. That's the book that I want. I never have dreams that are like that, like this. The Meadows, like really became this iconic piece of Twilight, interestingly.
Yeah. What confuses me about this stepping into the sunshine thing that Edward does
yeah.
in the end of chapter 12 and the beginning of chapter 13 is that I kind of almost remember it being different in Life and Death. I remember it being a much bigger deal in Life and Death, and I feel like there's no dialogue that accompanies it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk about
it's
this at
totally
all.
Wordless.
Actually, I can probably go grab Life and
yeah,
Death.
Yeah, I was gonna, I'm kind of curious.
Oh my god, it's so different.
Read it.
Okay, in Life and Death, eyes closed, Edith stepped blindly into the light. My heart jumped into my throat and I started sprinting toward her.
What?
Edith, It was only when her eyes flashed open and I got close enough to begin to understand what I was seeing that I realized she hadn't caught on fire.
Oh my god.
She threw her hand up again, palm forward, and I stumbled to a stop, almost falling to my knees. The light blazed off her skin, dancing, blah, 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 blah. I thought about falling to my knees on purpose. This was the kind of beauty you worshipped, the kind you built temples for and offered sacrifices to. I wished I had something in my empty hands to give her, but what would a goddess want from a mediocre mortal like me?
Wait, I this love that.
This is so different, and it's so good.
It's so good, but you know why? It's because that moment isn't actually present here. We skip to where they're already laying down. We don't get that initial moment. She says, Edward in the sunlight was shocking. I couldn't get used to it, though I had been staring at him all afternoon. They're laying in the grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Life and Death, like, also, Bo asks, does this hurt you? And she says no. It's like he has questions. It feels so much more, like, realistic and, like, the appropriate response to someone fucking glittering in the sun in front of
right.
you.
Right. Especially when all of vampire lore says that vampires can't be in the sun. I feel like I would have asked that question, like, a long time ago, especially anticipating some vampire showing me what happens in the sun. I'd be like, wait. Are you gonna die? Like, am I being punked right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, like, are you good,
homie? Yeah. Like, so yeah, they're in the meadow, and, oh, wait, we have to do the love at first bite. We got carried away.
Oh, right. I've prepared the love at first bite for today. This person is 35.
Okay.
The picture is a man inside a screened porch pointing at an alligator that is outside of the screened-in porch, outside by a pond. And the bio is... Are you in the outfield? Because you're an angel. And the song is Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Wow, a one-dimensional character.
I didn't have much to work with.
Wow. It's Phil, the minor league baseball player.
It is Phil.
Stepdad.
Yep, Bella's stepdad. So,
wow.
Swipe left, swipe right?
I would definitely swipe left on that. Because I don't like dating profiles that involve animals in that way. Like, it's like pointing at a fish or like an alligator. And I also don't like sports. So unless he's like supremely otherworldly attractive, but even then probably not.
What if he looks like he does in the movies?
What does he look like in the movies?
I don't know. It's like 2 seconds of them.
Oh my god. What if Renee and Phil met on a dating app? I bet they would.
They must have. Where else would they have met?
I mean,
met?
Not that they, like... I mean, I don't think Renee understands technology enough to have a dating profile on the That's internet true. In 2006, but yeah. I think it's realistic that nowadays they would meet on Tinder. Anyway.
Cool. Yeah, so now I guess we're moving into chapter 13, which is called Confessions. Yes. This is officially No Midnight Sun territory until... Mm-hmm. 3 months from now.
August 4th.
So excited.
So we get more here of how Edward's body works. She describes his skin on the first page of the chapter as white despite the faint flush from yesterday's hunting trip. So from that we know that when vampires feed, they like some of that blood like is in their skin, like going through their veins or something. She describes his skin when she's touching it as satin smooth, cool as stone. And then, perhaps most disturbingly, when he smiles, his teeth flashed in the sun. Do his teeth glitter? Or are they just, like, white?
That and, or like, they're just so white that they reflect light, I guess?
And then also, she's kind of, like, running her hands over his arm, following the faint pattern of bluish veins inside the crease at his elbow. So he has, obviously he has veins, but, I mean, the movies would say otherwise, but bluish veins is, like, veins that have... blood in them.
Yeah. So it's like presumably the blood of the people they or the of the animals they drink exists in their body. You'd think that would increase their body temperature.
You would think
temporarily at least.
I mean, it doesn't make sense really.
No,
that like they would be less pale. I guess I can get behind that, but their blood is blue in the body because it's not exposed to oxygen, and then it turns red. And so, like, when, or purple or whatever, when it's in the body, I don't know. When it goes into someone else's body, what happens? What happens when you have a blood transfusion?
I don't.
No idea.
I guess if they're sinking their teeth into an animal, and the blood goes into their teeth.
And doesn't hit the air. Is that how it works, though? Or is it going down their throat?
If it goes down their throat, I guess, like, maybe the first bit of it is red, and then, like, anything that gets out here is red.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe the, like, the part that just, like, the bulk of it would stay whatever color blood is when it's inside the body.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works when people take blood, because the blood that is drawn
is red.
Is red the second it comes out. I don't understand science. So.
Well, maybe I'm just thinking of the wrong thing, because I think maybe some, because there's different blood in your veins than the blood in your arteries. I think maybe one of them is red. I'm, again, speaking about something I have no idea on.
I have no.
Because one of them, because, I mean, oxygen circulates through your body in blood, and oxygen is what turns it red. And I think that happens in your arteries and not your veins. I could be completely wrong.
I have no.
But I'm not going to stop and do the research right now.
For sure, definitely not.
Either way, it is interesting that Edward has blue veins.
Yeah, it'd be really
It's a sign of normal humanness. So this whole chapter is, like, a long conversation. It really does end up being a turning point for their relationship. A lot happens. They get a lot of clarity, or especially Bella gets a lot of clarity about where Edward's head has been at this entire time. They end up, like, basically declaring that they're in love with one another. And we kind of understand where Edward's coming from in this a lot.
Yeah.
And, but with that same sort of ebb and flow of, like, fear and not fear and anger and not anger and then understanding.
There's a lot of these, like, iconic lines of Twilight that are happening in this chapter between, like, the as if you could outrun me,
mm-hmm.
everything about me invites you in, as if you could fight me off.
There's this kind of conflicting couple of lines here. So, I mean, we understand from what he says that it's a predator thing that he invites her in. Like, his voice, mm-hmm. his scent, the way he looks invites her in. And we kind of get that. In the last couple of chapters, we were talking about the conflation of thirst and sexual desire.
For sure.
And how, like, they're not separating those out a lot, especially not Edward. And there's a moment here at the top of 263 where he's really close to her, and she says, she should have flinched away from his unexpected closeness, but I was unable to move. His golden eyes mesmerized me. And you could read that as either, really. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a moment where just then she leans closer and he has to run away. So he says that he's the world's best predator, but then there's another part where he's talking about how most people avoid them because they seem so alien, which is, like, the exact opposite of what he just said.
I feel like it's not their physical characteristics that keep, like, the rest of the Forks high schoolers away from them.
Yeah.
It's their shitty-ass social skills.
Right.
And, like, maybe Edward's just misinterpreting the way that other people treat him as, like, he's like, oh, like, we're repulsive to them. And it's like, no, your siblings are dating each other.
Yeah, and you're just
fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, and you're quiet, and you make people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not you being a dangerous alien creature. Like, I don't think people react to them in the way that Edward projects onto them that they will, because I think it's just Edward hating himself. Because it's like, Charlie is not afraid of Carlisle.
True. He loves Carlisle very much.
He loves Carlisle, and he trusts Carlisle, and it's like, I think he is internalizing a lot of, like, his discomfort with his, like, species.
Yeah.
Like, in thinking that people are afraid of him. I don't think they're afraid of him.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird kind of two conflicting statements. I guess I could see it being different from, like, afar. Like, if you saw this person from afar, and maybe those powers don't work on you. But if they're, like, right in front of you, maybe the scent, everything, like, if all those things are working at once, it could be overpowering, maybe. I don't know.
Jessica, for example, is attracted to the Cullens and thinks they're beautiful, but I think he fails to take into account the human aspect of, like, not crossing each other's boundaries. Like, you know, maybe it is more dangerous for people when the vampires show interest in them, but it's like, Jessica would never, like, walk up to Edward.
No.
And, like, put her hand on his neck or something like that.
Right.
Like, it has to be reciprocated by him.
It would be funny if their power was so strong that it did cause people to fall all over them all the time. They wouldn't be able to go to high school if that were the case.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
That would be good for our, like, Midnight Sun Netflix series.
Yeah, like, a whole episode where, like, a bunch of people are, like, trying to get really close to Jasper.
It's funny because it's, like, it kind of would mirror the way that people are treating Bella. Like, she's, like, the shiny new toy. And it's people keep approaching her. And so, like, of course, like, there's the odd person that shows a lot of interest in Edward. Like, the waiter, the waitress at, and the hostess at Bella Italia. But, you know, people are not going to cross social boundaries to get close to the Cullens.
That would be funny if we understood it was like that. And then all of a sudden Bella shows up and it stops. And they all start doing it to her for, like, a week. And they're like, oh, we love Bella.
You, it'd be funny because they'd be like, is she
a vampire?
Supernatural? Like, is she a vamp? Like, what's happening? Like, why are they doing that to her? What happened? Like, I feel like Emmett would get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, he'd be like,
Emmett would be mad.
He would be, like, upset.
And then Alice would get, like, kind of, like, a little bit competitive and, like immediately try to be friends with her so that she could, like, get the attention back.
Yeah.
I felt there were many parts in this chapter where Edward is speaking very formally and, like, old-timey-ish, and she does comment on it at one point. He says, so where were we before I behaved so rudely? He asked in the gentle cadences of an earlier century. I feel like he's talking more like that in this chapter for some reason. I don't know if it's because probably the first one Stephanie wrote or what.
Yeah, that, or maybe, like, because he is away from people, like, for the weekend, maybe he, like, falls into a different speech pattern when he's not trying to, like, fit in so much.
Yeah, that's definitely true of, like, a lot of the way that he's behaving.
That seems to come out when the Cullens are at home. When Jasper tells stories about his past life, he's like, Major Start Jasper speaking. Whitlock, ma'am, which is the funniest line in all of the Twilight movies. So funny, the way that he immediately has a southern accent, and he's like, Major Jasper Whitlock, ma'am, and it's pulls, like, it right out. No one asked you to do this.
Well, after he does his whole, as if you could outrun me, as if you could fight me off, which, by the way, he's laughing during
Robert Pattinson. Not yelling. It's like a huge, like, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
Yeah. She says, I sat without moving, more frightened of him than I had ever been. I'd never seen him so completely freed of that carefully cultivated facade. So he's definitely acting more himself. And he does say in this section that it's too easy to be himself around her. And it seems like he's taking more responsibility, too. I feel like before he's been a lot like, you need to tell me not to hang out with you. But in this, he's being like, I can control myself. I swear that I will not hurt you. I'm like, thanks. You should have said that so long ago.
On 266, something that I noted down, it was hard to keep up. His sudden mood changes left me always a step behind, dazed, which I guess is, like, the replacement for, like, your mood swings are giving me whiplash. I'm glad she's kind of acknowledging that, because it's, like, so much the way that they, like, I couldn't imagine being in a conversation like this for, like, an entire day where I'm just, like, trying to keep up, and it's, like, how's he gonna feel? Like, am I in danger in this moment? Like, that's so high stakes. Fun.
Yeah, but it does seem like in this chapter she finally is grasping that he is dangerous to her, and maybe it's because she's now seen his powers demonstrated, and he's given her the information of, like, when they first met and how he literally almost killed her multiple times. I think that helps helped her understand, which it's like he probably could have shared that before. I understand why he didn't want to, but I felt like before he was sort of blaming her for not understanding how dangerous it was without actually explaining to her and giving her the concrete evidence, the receipts.
I feel like he's resistant too, because I feel like he might, like, I think he wanted to show her his, like, strength and stuff like that, because and speed, because I don't think that anyone has a frame of reference for that kind of, like,
true
behavior outside of, like, superhero movies, and, like, that seems so exaggerated and, like, I would never be able to imagine a human being doing that in front of me, or someone that presents as a human being doing that in front of me. So maybe he's just, like, waiting for the right time to show her, or the right time and place to show her what he's like, because he knows that it won't be as impactful as, like, him being like, I'm really strong, I'm really fast,
right?
Like, beyond, like, holding the car above her, like, which is not something that he can do in public.
Yeah. Can we discuss the food and drug metaphors that come up on page 267?
Yeah, because I hate them.
Yeah. So he reveals to her that something is some entirely new information, which is that her blood is more potent to him than anyone else's blood. She did not know that, and it makes a lot of sense. So at first he's using a food metaphor. Makes sense, I guess. It's, like, kind of boring. He's talking about ice cream, which is, like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. He's talking about how, like, the different flavors of ice cream, like, everyone has a favorite. And he's, like, trying to explain, like, you know, your blood is my favorite type of ice cream.
Yeah. And then he's like, this isn't the best analogy. And then he starts talking about alcoholism.
Right.
I don't know if this is how alcoholism actually works, which is, like, resist, like, being able to resist stale, gross beer, but not being able to resist really good-smelling, special cognac. I don't think that's how it works at all.
I don't think that's how it works.
Because alcoholics don't get addicted to really expensive alcohols, usually.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the smell thing probably is accurate for at least if, like, I don't think it has to do with, like, the quality of it. I think it just has to do with the presence of the smell.
Yeah, it just seems so irresponsible of Edward, who's probably never had a sip of alcohol in his life.
It's true.
To say, you know, alcoholics, to Bella.
Yeah.
Someone who's never had a sip of alcohol in her life. Who's that metaphor helping?
Yeah.
The and reader?
Definitely, like, the 13-year-old readers, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Mormons also don't drink alcohol, right?
Yeah, so it's like Stephanie?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Like,
yeah.
I'm confused.
I think maybe there just is no good metaphor, and he's trying, but he does a really bad job. And then he admits to doing a bad job, and he says, maybe I should have made our alcoholic a heroin addict instead.
It just becomes more and more and more and more irresponsible.
It's also just, that's so disturbing. Like, that's such a dark comparison to draw.
Yeah.
Also, it's not an addiction, because it is more like food. It's more like water, really. It's more like if you needed wine to survive, but if wine didn't make you drunk when you had, like, it.
Blood doesn't fuck you up like alcohol does or heroin does, so I don't think it's fair. I think water is the best comparison, and maybe just, like, most people have never been so thirsty,
mm-hmm.
like, because most people reading Twilight
have access
have never, like, lost access to, like, any drinking water.
Yeah.
So, like, I think we just don't understand what thirst really feels like.
True.
Beyond, like, temporary discomfort.
Right.
But I think, like, water probably is the best analogy, because it's, like, blood is necessary for him to live.
Mm-hmm. Although, like, what happens when they don't have any... What happens?
They can't
die. They just, like,
there's the question... Useless. The question, like, of the vampire in space, like, what happens if there's no one's blood around to drink? Like, what happens to them? I don't know.
Probably depends on the particular universe we're talking about, I guess. Water is accurate, but then on 268, he's talking about Jasper and Emmett experiencing similar things. It's interesting, because Jasper's actually been a vampire for longer, but he hasn't resisted human blood for as long. And it's that, apparently. Apparently, it's the resisting the human blood that gives you the nuance of different kinds of blood. So for Jasper, it's all the same. But for Emmett and for Edward, he says, Jasper hasn't had the time to grow sensitive to the differences in smell and in flavor. It's almost like being a sommelier of blood.
I think it makes sense. Like, when you're really, really hungry...
Yeah.
When I'm really, really hungry, if you put food in front of me, it doesn't really matter the quality or the type of it.
Yeah.
It's still gonna smell in a way that makes my mouth water, you know?
Right.
Whereas when I'm not hungry, I'm probably less tempted by fancier food.
Right.
Or, so like, not fancier food.
Right. So Jasper...
And more likely to, like, seek out the more refined.
Yeah.
Or not refined, but maybe the thing that I prefer.
Right. Yeah, so Jasper can't make those differentiations because he's not used to resisting. I thought that was really interesting.
I always forget that Emmett killed someone.
He killed two people.
Yeah, killed the people that he had that experience with. And so from what I remember in Midnight Sun, and it's been 2 years since I've read it, from what I remember, Edward, like, confides in him this problem, and Emmett's like, you're gonna kill her.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he says a couple pages later. He totally throws his family under the bus and, like, basically tells Bella which of his family members wanted him to kill her and which of them were on his side.
It's like, Edward, you're going to be with this person forever.
Yeah, like,
I want to, like, shake him and be like, this is your wife.
So not encouraging for Bella. Oh, my God. On page 269, they're discussing, like, the context of when they met, like, really changed whether or not he killed her upon first meeting her. And she was like, so, like, if we met in a dark alley or something, as if, like, if they met in a dark alley, he would have killed her instantly. I thought that was an interesting callback to, like, when she was in a dark alley in Port Angeles.
Yeah.
Probably not intentional at all, but...
Probably not.
That's a trope. It's, like, that's where violence happens.
Right. It's interesting that he does say, too, like, even in the context that we met, it took everything I had not to jump up in the middle of that class full of children, and he stops abruptly. It's interesting that he talks about it in that way, because he definitely, it comes to this, like, superiority conflict, mm-hmm. complex that he has over the rest of the people at Forks. He calls them children. He's also not, like, I mean, he has the experiences, but he doesn't treat Bella like she's a 17-year-old.
It's true. Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Because she's, like, mature and whatever. The way that he refers to them as children, I'm like, and what are you?
If that's really how he feels, does it feel like if like, we had to pretend to be in kindergarten? Yeah. And, like, associate with those people as our peers all day, every day. Is that what it's like?
Maybe. I feel like the difference between, like, the developmental stages is less, like, as you get older, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I feel like the difference between, like, us and a kindergartner is greater than, like, a 17-year-old and, like, a 100-year-old. But still, yeah. Yeah, I guess it would be, like, us going back to, like, maybe, like, middle school.
Yeah. I mean, we're 24 and I think of 17-year-olds as children. So I guess it's for someone like Edward who is, yes, frozen at 17, but has been to medical school multiple times. Like, I guess it's not a stretch for him to be like, these people are children, not because of their age, but because of their experience. But then that doesn't explain Bella. But Bella is definitely not very childlike in many ways. She's had to like grow up. She's not like other girls, but she's had to grow up really fast and like take care of herself a lot. So that probably impacts something. I don't know.
Okay, when they're talking about this whole, like, I tried to rearrange my schedule, blah, 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 on page 270, there's this line that I think is similar to this other line that you pointed out earlier about, like, did you never find anyone that you wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Comes across as, like, perhaps unintentionally, but incredibly sexual, where he says, like, as I tried to arrange my schedule in a pointless attempt to avoid you, you were there in that close, warm little room. The scent was maddening. I so very, very nearly took you then.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yes, it's very sexual. I read this
as a child?
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely trying to avoid words like murder and kill when they
talk about and it's this. Like, it comes across as like worse than I think using the term murder or kill would be in terms of like maturity. There's connotations to that phrasing.
Yes, there are. Also on that page, two things. Why didn't he just leave the biology classroom that day? Why didn't he just come up with some excuse, go to the bathroom and not come back, and then like be like, oh, I'm so sorry, I was sick? He could have gotten out of that so easily. He could have left and not come back. He didn't have to put up with that appearance.
I don't know.
He could have just left.
You're right. I wonder if he was afraid to, like, walk by her.
But I feel like he was still holding his breath. I don't know. Maybe, maybe he just, like, couldn't move, but...
Maybe, like, fight, flight, freeze?
Maybe. But he's the predator in the situation.
It's almost like he is frozen, right? Like, because why wouldn't he just leave?
Maybe
he's just stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the sort of, like, official stance would be that he is staying to keep up the appearance of being totally fine. And it seems like he takes pride in being able to do that because of the way he describes wanting to come back after being in Alaska. Like, he wants to prove it to himself that he can handle this. So it seems like maybe that's why, which is irresponsible. Also on 270, he is talking about being in the office basically trying to switch his schedule and Bella realizes that Miss Cope could have died also. Mm-hmm. And she says, poor Mrs. Cope. I shivered again at how close I'd come to being inadvertently responsible for her death. I'm like, sweetie, that would not have been your fault.
Victim blaming.
She's victim blaming her, like, herself so much. That's so wild to me that he would be like, I almost killed you and another woman. And she'd be like, oh, it would have been my fault. He kind of explains why he's interested in her and how he got to that point. He becomes interested in, like, in keeping up the appearance. And he kind of feels like if he can be strong enough to handle not only being next to her but talking to her, then he can handle anything. He seems like he really just wants to prove it to himself. And it seems like it was just a slippery slope from there of, like, actually talking to her and then being like, oh, wait, I actually really like this person.
After this, like, extremely long conversation with Edward and Bella, he turns the conversation from, like, this danger to saying, you are the most important thing to me now, the most important thing to me ever. And I was like,
I felt
commitment hours.
I know. I felt a little bit, even after that huge conversation, I'm like, but where did that come from?
And she seems to, like, she's excited by it, a little surprised maybe, but she's, like, agreeing wholeheartedly. Like, they come to this so the lion fell in love with the lamb.
Right.
And it's like, y'all are in love now?
They're in love now. I mean, she said she was in love with him, like, in the one of the last chapters. Yeah. But they're sharing it now. It's very... First of all, it's very heteronormative. Also, what's very heteronormative is on page 273, he calls her Isabella.
Yeah.
It's very intense. We get this from her in, like, the entirety of the book, but it's kind of summed up on page 272 in the middle where she says, I was filled with compassion for his suffering, even now as he confessed his craving to take my life.
Yeah, that's, like, the whole moral of this chapter, pretty much.
Do we think that Bella should have a career in restorative justice and anti-carceral politics?
What I really like about this lion and lamb thing here is that, in contrast to the movie, where it's this incredibly, like, so the lion fell in love with the lamb. What a stupid lamb. What a sick, masochistic lion. They're laughing.
They are.
In the book, they're like, oh, this is so dumb.
They're, and like, it's, we, like, are big idiots.
Yeah. And it's like, they're so much more, like, self-aware and, like, less wrapped up. Like, they're still incredibly dramatic, but they have these moments where they can, like, laugh about how incredibly
ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous the situation they're in is. And so I love that contrast. And I think that gets lost a lot in the translation to film. Yeah.
So definitely the thing that I miss the most. And then they do start, like, setting some boundaries, like some well-communicated boundaries, as opposed to just, like, boundaries that they don't discuss. On the bottom of 274, Bella is like, please tell me what I did wrong before, like, when she leaned in, like, kind of to kiss him. Mm-hmm. And because she wants to be able to, like, help and, like, understand what he's comfortable with or not. Yeah, this is where he says, most humans instinctively shy away from us and are repelled by our alienness. And I was like, that's not true. You just haven't been so close to a girl in your life.
Yeah. I'd love to see a moment where, like, one of the human boys, like, claps Edward on the back or something like that in this comedy adaptation that we're doing. It'd be so funny if, like, Mike or Eric or Tyler, like, claps one of the Collins on the back and is like, you're fucking cold. Something like that. It's like the first time that, like, Emmett has been touched by anyone other than his siblings and his parents in, like, 25 years.
Emmett is, like, bros with the humans, and they're like, he's, like, getting cuddly with the homies. They're like, here, bro, take my sweater.
You're and freezing.
But he's so much bigger than all of them, so he's wearing, like, a tiny
it's like a crop hoodie. Top on him. Give us the rights.
Yeah. This is the part where they just touch each other.
It certainly is.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about it.
I don't think it needs to be talked about. There's really not much there in terms of substance. They're just, it's, like, true.
They're just getting used to being next to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and touching each other.
Is it problematic that when he's really close to her, she says, I knew at any moment it could be too much and my life could end so quickly that I might not even notice, and I couldn't make myself be afraid. I couldn't think of anything except that he was touching me. If you take that out of context, which I'm not saying that you should take it out of context, but if you did, or if you did, like, a domestic violence reading of it, it becomes, like, a lot less sexy.
Totally. I think it's interesting, like, there's a lot here that can be read from, like, a trauma lens, and, like, the way that they're attempting to set boundaries is really interesting from, like, a consent lens, like, to see the way that they're, like, vocally communicating about consent in a way that most, and, like, consent and boundaries and, like, touching and kissing and, like, what's too much and whatever, in a way that a lot of fictional accounts of relationships do not address.
True.
So I think there's some positives there, because it's like, that's great. That's a great lesson. That's a great lesson.
For sure.
To have conversations about intimacy before it occurs so that you are prepared. mm-hmm. for people's boundaries. Mm-hmm. But then this other lens of like, she's in danger. She's separating it from him as a person because she knows he doesn't want to hurt her, but he is capable of hurting her and has come close to it in the past. And like, that's, it doesn't matter what his intention is if he's acting violent towards her. And like, it's like this loss of control. That's like something that people frequently like talk about in terms of like their abuser goes into like a different headspace when they're being violent, and it's like they don't mean to, they don't want to, but they just lose control. And it's like
that interpersonal understanding of violence also ignores like the larger systemic issues that create it, and like issues of control and any psychological abuse that is happening in tandem, which it probably is almost definitely. Like, definitely a lot of comparisons have been made to that, mm-hmm. to Twilight, but it's so hard to do that because it's not in the same context, but it exists in a world where that context does exist.
Yeah.
And it exists in a way that it might be, like, these things might be taken out of context and perpetuate those ideas, or romanticize those things in the people who are reading it. I don't know.
I think maybe the interesting thing is, like, what outsiders think about Bella and Edward's relationship. And you get that a tiny bit with Mike, who says, like, he looks at you like you're something to eat. I don't like it. And it's, like, mm-hmm. other people are picking up on the dynamic between Bella and Edward being not typical. And they're not sure what to make of it. And no one really goes as far as Mike does into this, like, there might be something ominous here.
They do touch a little bit in this section on how this is new for both of them and how the hungers they are experiencing, is the word they use, is foreign to them and mm-hmm. and new. And it's for Edward. I think Edward, in the last episode, we were trying to, like, we were speculating that maybe he doesn't know how to parcel out the thirst from the sexual feelings. He doesn't know which one he's feeling, but it seems like he's starting to here mm-hmm. because of the amount of humanness that he's experiencing. Also, they're like touching each other, they're having this really intense conversation, and I just want to bring it back, I just want to ground us in the fact that they are dressed the same right now in a tan sweater.
Well, Edward is not wearing his sweater anymore.
Oh, that's right, they're wearing sleeveless shirts. So yeah, much better.
They're wearing sleeveless shirts, which is much
much better, more, much sexier. Yeah.
So sexy.
One of my favorite Edward lines of all time is on page 279, where mm-hmm. they're going to go back and he's going to run with her through the woods, so it's going to be a lot faster. And he says, "Come on, little coward, climb on my back." It's kind of like a hold on tight spider monkey line.
Yeah. This is where she gets to see his, like, super speed and, like, witness it for the first time. And she gets really nauseous. And it's like, you dumbass, what did you think was going to happen?
So she's, like, almost vomiting. And then he's like, this is a great time for us to have our first kiss.
I wrote that. I was like, listen, I feel like they could have kissed in the meadow before she got all dizzy.
Yeah.
And this is where I was raising the question, like, has Bella ever kissed someone?
Right.
Because if she hadn't, like, you'd think it would run through her head, though. Like, this is my first kiss.
True.
Like, when I had my first kiss, I was like, this is my first kiss.
Right. Edward is, like, so beside himself for the rest of this chapter. He's so, this is the happiest we've ever seen him.
Also, it's funny because after the kiss, like, she's like, should I back up? And he's like, no, it's tolerable. And I'm like, yeah, what everyone wants to hear after their first kiss. It's tolerable.
Right. Well, she's just had this, like, kind of wild, not wild, pretty normal reaction to kissing someone that you like, but more than what maybe both of them bargained for in that moment. And actually felt like that was really well communicated. I mean, in the movie, that happens and he flings himself away from her very dramatically. And it's like, honestly, that's traumatizing.
Yeah.
But here in the book, it happens and he just kind of, like, firmly moves, like, stops kissing her, and then she offers to move away and he's like, no, it's okay, it's tolerable. Mm-hmm. They drive back. Friends don't let friends drunk drive. Another really good Edward line.
It's a good Edward
also
line.
Are you still faint from the run, or was it my kissing expertise? First of all, it was probably your first kiss, so it was probably from the run.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Edward when he's happy and, like, making little jokes. When they joke about, like, Bella doing laundry and he's like, don't fall in.
Yeah.
And, like, stuff like that, it's like, it's so fun. It's like their relationship is much more fun than people give it credit for.
You can see why they like each other and, like, want to be around each other. Yeah. It's not just this, like, supernatural pull or, like, the mm-hmm. mystery. It's like they can be themselves around each other. We stand.
We love it. We love them.
Should we plug something?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Forgot we
Let's plug. I actually made a list of things that we could plug so that we wouldn't sit here like dumbasses and be like, what are things in the world? Let's plug our favorite Animal Crossing resident.
Okay. My favorite Animal Crossing resident is Sydney. She's a koala. I gave her a acorn hat and she wears it around the island and she always sings Bubblegum KK, which I love. And she's really cute and she calls you Sunshine.
Mine is Zell. He is a gazelle. He's smug type. He's very cool and like kind of full of himself in like a entertaining way. Has a pool table in his house. And I love his energy. That's about it.
Cool.
I wanted to plug our Patreon real quick because it's been a second. We're going to be releasing a lot more content this summer. Thanks to all of our patrons who like literally like make this podcast possible, like help us keep it on the air. There's definitely like a lot of expenses that go into podcasting. There's a lot of cool things that you get if you join our Patreon. You can join a Discord, you get a monthly newsletter and playlist, you can get extended episodes for each episode of the podcast with like lots of extraneous stories and silly details and stuff like that. You can also purchase a producer credit and be a producer of the podcast. Each podcast episode takes about 10 hours to produce when you factor in all the prep we do, the recording time, and mostly the editing and post-production time. So a lot of work goes into it. So if you want to become a patron for at least $1 a month, we would love you forever and you can hang out with us in the Discord.
Yeah. Discord has been popping lately with the Midnight Sun news, so it's going to be really fun. Join us.
Yeah, there's a link in the episode description. That's it. That's all, Forks.
Thank you for listening to Gender Forking. All of season one is now streaming.
To stay updated about the podcast, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @genderforking.
For more Twilight content from us, you can follow our blog at bowlingshirtbellas.tumblr.com. For other inquiries, email us at bowlingshirtbellas@gmail.com.
If you're interested in supporting the production and maintenance of this podcast, head to patreon.com/genderforking. The music you are hearing is from O Lucifer.